Thank you. All right, unless you need it. Call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order today. Welcome, everyone. Sorry we're a few minutes late. We had a little bit of a late-running caucus, which kept some of us away. So today we have, first of all, I want to welcome the people who are here for the Food Bank Day. It's great to see your shining faces in the audience. We have a public hearing today on the federal earned income tax credit allowable as a credit against Oregon personal income tax. And so I will open a public hearing, and I will start by inviting Senator Rosenbaum and Representative Kump to introduce this bill, this issue.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon. It's nice to see what it looks like on the other side of the dais here.
How do we look up here?
You look fabulous.
That was the correct answer, Senator Rosenbaum.
So for the record, I am State Senator Diane Rosenbaum from Senate District 21 in Southeast Portland and Milwaukee, and one of your colleagues. And I want to start by thanking the chair and members of this committee for holding what I hope will be the first of many discussions about the idea contained in Senate Bill 392, which is expanding Oregon's earned income tax credit, which we believe is one of the best, if not the absolute best program that's ever come along to help low-income working families who are struggling just to meet their basic necessities. And you'll hear much more from the witnesses to follow about the explanation of the proposal contained in this bill, but suffice it to say for now that it will provide real economic help where it's needed most to 200,000 hardworking Oregonians, most of whom are families with children. And there is a group of advocates with me here today that you'll be hearing from shortly called Oregonians for Working Families, who have been working on expanding the state EITC since last legislative session, continuing in the interim before the Joint Revenue Restructuring Committee that Senators Burdick and Morse served on, and resulting in the proposal that's before you today. I want to say that just a couple comments that are not in my prepared testimony. When we, many, many months ago, I guess now probably going back about 9 months ago, first appeared before the Joint Revenue Restructuring Committee, I heard a lot of people talk about how the economy is getting bad and the tax system's pretty messed up. But really, we have to remember that we're all in the same boat. And the good chair, Lane Shetterly, the former chair of this committee and chair of that tax restructuring committee, said privately, well, it may be that we're all in the same boat, but some of us are in steerage. And I think that's the reality of today's economy as we find it just spiraling downward at unbelievable rates, that it is really staggering to all of us. But I think what we need to think about as you're listening to the testimony to follow is that for a lot of people, the very people affected by this bill, this is way more than a theoretical discussion. It goes way beyond even the values that you have about what you think a tax system should be, you know, whether you think people at the bottom should pay the same as people at the top, which I would warrant probably most people don't think. But for the people that need the help of this bill, this is just not a discussion they even have the luxury of having, because they're so busy struggling just to figure out how to pay the rent, how to put food on the table, which bill to not pay this month, so that they have to make decisions that are probably unthinkable to most of us sitting here, even anybody in this room today. And I thought it was interesting that last Friday, Paul Krugman, the Nobel Prize-winning economist, was speaking just across the street at Willamette University after he'd spoken the night before in Portland, and he was asked a question by one of the students about, you know, what advice, in addition to all of his punditry about what should we do for the economy, he was asked, what practical advice do you have for real people, you know, to just deal with this craziness? And he said, well, I can say live within your means, put aside reserves, and play it safe, which is really probably very sound pragmatic advice, but it rings pretty hollow if you're a family of four who's struggling to get along on the $20,000 that is really the poverty level for a family of four. You can't really put anything in reserves. You can't play it safe because you gave up those strategies a long time ago by just going through your bills, shuffling them, and then just hoping your car doesn't break down this month because you have to get the kids to school and you have to get to work as best you can. And he also said, support politicians who are trying to fix things because it's up to policymakers to solve the problems. And that's a tough assignment, one that I share with you all. It's certainly not obvious what strategies there are that will fix this. But I would just urge you as you listen to the testimony today and move forward in this session to think about the choices that are in front of us and also the opportunity that this bill does present to provide some real help to those people who would like to be sucking something away, like to be playing it safe and have reserves, but are just never going to get there. And hopefully, not today, but someday before we leave here, we will be able to see this as part of a solution that we can actually come out with and be able to help those people in steerage maybe get a little bit above the bottom of the boat. Thank you very much. Thank you for holding this hearing, and I'm joined by my colleague.
Thank you, Senator Rosenbaum, and thank you for your hard work on this. We've been talking about this at your initiation all through the interim, and you've just really stuck with it, and I really appreciate your leadership on this issue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Comp.
Thank you, Chair Burdick and members of the Revenue Committee. I, too, want to thank Senator Rosenbaum.
You need to identify yourself.
Yes, I'm Representative Betty Comp, and I serve House District 22. And I want to share my appreciations for Senator Rosenbaum because she has shown tremendous leadership. And she shared some things that are part of what I wanted to share with you today because I come in support of Senate Bill 392, which changes the earned income tax credit. If you want to go into a time warp of about 20 years ago, I was a different person than I am today. I was a single mom and was looking at how to provide support for my four daughters. I grew up here in Oregon on a small farm with 13 brothers and sisters, and many of my siblings hate it when I say we grew up in poverty, but that's the only description I have of our life. We did without a lot. And I won't go into all those details because there's many people that live the same way today. But as a single mom, I had lots of blessings, but with those blessings came that we needed to deal with the basics of life. I started college when I was 36 years old, and then my sophomore year, when I was trying to put the pieces together and try to figure out, okay, how do we do this? I had received Pell Grants. I did get student loans and all these things. And yet it's like, okay, how do we make ends meet? I worked part-time and different odd jobs. And I went back and looked at my tax forms. I earned $7,000 of taxable income that year as a full-time student. And then when I was filling out my tax forms, that was my first realization that, wow, somebody, the state of Oregon, the federal government, somebody's going to give me a little bit of money because I am trying so hard. It was the first time I learned about earned income tax credit. I received a couple hundred dollars, and I don't know how to describe kind of the nice surprise when you're filling out your tax forms when your daughters the day before said, well, Mom, I need a prom dress, and you're trying to figure out how to pay for a prom dress. And I assure you, we know what consignment stores are. That's how you do to make ends meet. And some of us don't like to ask for help, don't like to get food stamps. I was told by a student assistant counselor one day, they said, well, why don't you just go on welfare? And I said, well, That's why, so long as I can work, I'm not going to do that, and to provide for my family. And so when you are a responsible citizen, when you do the best you can and know that somebody is going to help you in these ways, it does, it means a lot. I'll read my final sentence because it really says what I feel about our need for our families, and that is Senate Bill 392 is about fairness. It's about protecting our families. And during these incredibly difficult economic times, it is necessary. And I do respectfully ask your support at looking at this issue and considering that and how it will help many, many families in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Does anyone have any questions of our panel? Thank you so much. We have five people signed up, so I'll take them in a group of three and a group of two, and then we will open it up to anybody else in the audience who wants to say something. So we'll start off with Mike Leachman, Noreen Goplin, and Patty Whitney Wise. Welcome to the committee. You're very well organized. The sign-up list is identical to Senator Rosenbaum's list. I just feel very well supported up here as a chair.
Well, thank you to the committee for holding the hearing. My name is Mike Leachman. I'm with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. We're a research and education institute. We're based in Silverton. And I'm here with my colleagues to ask for your support for Senate Bill 392. It would, as you know, improve the Oregon Earned Income Tax Credit. There's really nothing else that you'll do this session that will directly benefit so many of Oregon's low-income working families and their children as this bill. Thousands of families in your districts would benefit directly. And improving the EITC is an important step towards restoring some more fairness to our overall state and local tax system. One in seven households in the state benefit from the EITC. It's over 200,000 households. And one of the handouts that you have with you is one that says it's titled Expanding the EITC in 2009. And in the back of that are some maps that show EITC recipiency by legislative district. So you can see in your own district the share of taxpayers who receive the EITC. Those numbers, by the way, are for 2005. And as soon as we get some more recent data, we're going to be updating them. Nearly all of the EITC goes to families with children. Although childless adults can get a small amount. And most of the value of the credit goes to families with incomes under $20,000, although you can get you are eligible for some credit up to about $40,000 of income for married families. The credit, just to give you a brief history, was created during the Ford administration. It was expanded significantly under President Reagan and President Clinton, the federal EITC. Oregon created our state credit in 1997. It was enacted with very broad bipartisan support that year. It was shepherded by then Senate President Brady Adams. And the initial bill on the EITC won a 30-0 vote in the Senate. That year. It's our state credit is simply calculated as 6% of the federal EITC, and so it's very easy for taxpayers and the Department of Revenue to calculate what the credit is. The average recipient in Oregon today gets about $85 from the Oregon EITC. So why should increasing the our Oregon small credit be a priority in such difficult times? I'm going to mention four reasons. One is that Oregon is one of a minority of states that continue to tax the wages of families who live below the poverty line despite their work effort. And, you know, that's really backwards. We're making it harder for families that are really struggling to get into the middle class. That hurts them, their communities, and our economy in the long term. And second, Oregon's overall tax system is regressive. So, as you know, that means that the lowest income households are paying a higher share of their income in state and local taxes overall than are the wealthiest Oregonians. Now, it's true that because our system is heavily dependent on the income tax, our overall system is not as regressive as state and local tax systems nationally, but it is still regressive. And I think most Oregonians would see that as a tax system that's upside down. If you enact Senate Bill 392, it wouldn't be enough on its own to make Oregon's overall state and local tax system progressive, but it would take an important step in that direction. Third, wages have not kept up with wages for most workers in Oregon haven't kept up with productivity growth and economic growth as inequality has worsened over the last generation. And if you look just at the last business cycle, from 2000 until early last year when we slipped into recession, the wages of most workers in Oregon over the course of that business cycle actually declined, even though Oregon posted the most rapid growth in worker productivity of any state in the country, and even though our overall economic growth as a state easily outpaced U.S. Growth over the course of the cycle. So, In the long term, the Senate Bill 392 is part of building a better economy. Of course, building an economy that, when it grows, benefits everybody or a broader swath of Oregonians is not primarily the responsibility of the tax system. But we shouldn't have a tax system that makes inequality worse. Fourth and finally, Oregon's EITC credit is small compared to other states that have credits. Other states have already expanded or created credits that are larger than Oregon's. Existing state credits range from a 3.5% credit in Louisiana to one that's in Wisconsin provides a 43% credit for some filers. So ours at 6% is the sixth smallest of the 24 states that have state EITCs. And if we increase the credit to 18%, as we would under Senate Bill 392, that would put us smack in the middle of the pack. We would be 12th of the 24 states that have state EITCs. Just very briefly, the under Senate Bill 392, the typical family would get about, the average family would get about $180 a year in additional assistance. If you're a family of four at the poverty line, it's about $22,000 this year. It would mean about $480 more. And that's money that the families can really use, put to good use in these hard times. You know, I understand that the revenue crisis that we're in makes for difficult choices, but it also creates opportunities for you to make real improvements to Oregon's tax system. And Senate Bill 392 improves a well-targeted, efficient mechanism for helping low-income working families. You know, I know your choices aren't easy, but keep in mind that Oregonians probably don't consider it a priority to have a tax system that's hardest on the poorest and easiest on those who are most comfortable. And I think if you look for opportunities to improve our tax system and the EITC this session, it seems like this session, maybe more than others, you're likely to find them with so many revenue pieces moving on the fiscal field of play. And I would also say in that regard that that the committee over the course of the session will be called on to approve the creation or extension of more than one tax credit program. And I just urge you that when you consider those to think about the priority of the EITC improvement relative to the other tax credits that will be before you. So thank you all for your support of the existing EITC. When it was created a decade or so ago, it was an important step. But it's not doing enough to change the balance of opportunity in Oregon. It's just too small. So I urge your support for this bill, and I thank you for holding the hearing and the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you. And committee, I think we'll wait till we hear the panel unless somebody has a burning, urgent question that just absolutely can't wait. Okay, who's next?
Okay. Chairwoman Senator Burdick and members of the committee, my name is Noreen Goplin, and I'm the Director of Advocacy for the Lutheran Church, ELCA, in Oregon. We have 124 congregations, a little more than 50,000 members in the state. I also serve as the lead convener for the Oregon Faith Roundtable Against Hunger, which is an organization which has almost 700 Oregonians on its listserv, and which has roundtables primarily in the Portland metro area, Salem, Eugene, and Astoria. But we have members from throughout the state. These are people who have taken a look at hunger very seriously and how one addresses it. And together we feel that the two most important devices that government has had to affect people who are living in poverty are food stamps and the earned income tax credit. It has that kind of importance for folks. And also, we are very encouraged by the fact that the EITC has strong bipartisan support. At a time when that often is called into challenge, we know that people who are concerned about their neighbors are willing to move past partisanship in order to address the needs that they see in the community. The poor in Oregon are facing extraordinary financial struggles today. We witness this as we see the number of people who are coming into food banks, food pantries, and all of the direct service agencies that address their needs. Pastors in Oregon are aware of this because so many needs are coming to the door of their churches and synagogues and mosques, and that the needs that are being presented to them are much more extensive than they've seen in the past. Certainly things like medical bills, need for food, a variety of things, but I've selected four anecdotes that ministers have shared with me because I think it really points out some of the difficulty people are having. A father whose son broke his arm could afford to take him to medical care to have the bone set. However, he then didn't have the financial resources to get the cast off. Extraordinary. Just think of yourself as that parent who is challenged by that kind of need. A young mother, solely responsible for her two daughters and unable to pay city water and sewer charges and had shutoffs. How do you prepare food, laundry, bathe, without water? And no water in Oregon? It's extraordinary. A family where both mom and dad work. They work part-time jobs. They're faced by mechanical problems in their older car. They often miss work and not only lose income, but put those jobs in jeopardy. lost winter jackets become a family crisis. Heating costs skyrocket, and you worry about shutoffs, not snowboarding on that white stuff. Is the car safe on slippery roads with worn-out tires? Scores of requests like this are coming into the ministers of Oregon. The requests are often more expensive. One question is about the community resources. Most of the needs that have a program or a safety net that would be responding to it. But those who have been coming to pastors have found that they were turned away at those safety net poverty programs because they have expended their resources. When I discuss this need with pastors or the social outreach committees of a variety of congregations and a variety of denominations, I ask them how often they could assist. How often could they write a check for $350 for a family, for 10 families, for 100 families, and with 200,000 impacted by the EITC? It's very easy to see that the resources of congregations are not adequate to meet the kind of needs that are coming to them. This past January, many people in the church community held their annual meetings where they set their budgets and their goals for the year. And I must tell you, there is a strong commitment to maintain a strong partnership with those who are living in poverty. And this comes from many denominations. However, saying that, I want to caution you because the church community in Oregon cannot meet the needs that are coming to their doors today. And that's a very serious issue. What is the role of the earned income tax credit in these and other circumstances? First, it helps to stabilize family income and allows them to catch up on bills or invest in tires. Second, it provides a financial resource that helps them meet the cost of living. But third, it provides a fairness in the tax code that for those who are taxed at lower incomes in Oregon than most other states. Another need that we learned in our conversation was the lack of information about the earned income tax credit by people for whom it could be helping. We're very appreciative of the programs of AARP and Cash Oregon who provide taxpayer assistance. That impact is very important. And these are first lines of defense, among many others, that address poverty. I want you to know that we support a significant increase in the percentage. Certainly a doubling of the current 6%. And when we've had conversations, we've had not quite a majority, but close to it, willing to go to three times the current rate. Our neighbors are in trouble. We need to recognize their situation and provide a benefit that helps them to stabilize their household income. While many are rightfully wary of the current fiscal issues, and we would expect that you would be a bit wary about it as well, we cannot be reticent to help those who are the most vulnerable in our state. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Patty, welcome.
Thank you. I'm Patty Whitney Wise, the director for the Oregon Hunger Relief Task Force. And we came to this issue early on and were part of the coalition that passed the original state earned income tax credit as well. We, as you know, have been in the news a few times in the last few years here in Oregon as number one in hunger. And then with lots of work and lots of policy changes, we bumped up to number 22. And unfortunately, this last year, we're back at number three, which says to me we did a lot of short-term fixes that were really helpful for folks, but once the recession hit, boom, back down again. The earned income tax credit is one of those long-term solutions that will help families over time during good times as well as during recessionary times. And it is one of the longer-term solutions that we feel will make a difference in our hunger rate over time for these families. We feel it's really important to give them those resources. And you've heard it before, but I'm going to say it again. We're one of the only states that tax below poverty wages, which is just crazy. If you look at the poverty level, it's already very much out of date. It probably needs to be at least twice that much to meet a family's basic needs. So to be taxing people below that level literally means you're taking food off the plate or money that would go towards rent or utilities. So, you know, this really is a fairness issue. It's a very important step that once we put it in place, helps those families year after year, helps them move forward and step up. So we urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Patty, you said that we're one of the few states that tax people who are below the poverty level. Are there? This is kind of news to me. I assume that everybody had kind of a sliding scale.
Well, and they do have sliding scales, but for instance, in California, it doesn't start until above poverty wages. So the slide happens at a different place. Where here in Oregon, we not only start low, we get to our top rate really fast, 9%. It's almost a flat tax in many ways because it bumps up at such low wages to the 9% level even.
Okay, if you take California as an example, they don't tax the poverty
correct.
Below the poverty line.
Correct.
Do they also have an earned income tax credit?
Do you know what
no,
they do?
Chair Burdick, no, they California does not have a state EITC.
Yeah, and if we could somehow wave a wand and stop taxing people below the federal poverty level, would we need an income tax credit?
It certainly would help a lot of families to not do that. The difference with the earned income tax credit is that for those families making very low wages, they get back a refund beyond what they've paid in taxes that help offset their other payroll taxes as well as local taxes. So those lowest income families would not benefit as much as from the earned income tax credit, but they certainly still would all benefit from us restructuring the tax system.
Okay, thank you. Questions from the committee? Thank you very much. While our next witnesses are coming up, I just want to tell the audience that several new people have come in, so we put out an additional sign-up sheet if anybody wants to sign up to testify. And now we will take Reagan Gray and John Mullen. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you. Chair Burdick, members of the committee, my name is Reagan Gray. I am a policy analyst with Children First for Oregon. And I'd like to express Children First's support for Senate Bill 392. Children First's mission is to make Oregon a place where all children can thrive. And we believe all children should have a chance to live up to their full potential regardless of where they begin. Senate Bill 392 will lift families out of poverty and give children the chance to succeed. Growing up in poverty puts children at risk for a variety of negative outcomes. Children raised in poverty are more likely than others to have chronic health problems, experience hunger, die during childhood, drop out of school, and be poor as adults. A financially stable family gives children the best chance at a healthy, safe, and successful life. And as a result of this current economic downturn that we're in, it's estimated that there'll be an additional 3 million children across the country that will fall into poverty, which will be a significant long-term drag on our country's economy. As a First Focus report noted, the additional 3 million children to the ranks of the poor would mean that an overall economic loss of at least $1.7 trillion over the lifetime of these children. That amounts to about $35 billion a year. And the EITC federally has been the most successful anti-poverty program, lifting over 2 million children out of poverty each year. In this economic downturn, we believe it's even more important that we work to keep children and their families from slipping into the ranks of poverty for our communities and for our economy here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen, I'm the co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, and I'm here today really to talk about the depth and breadth of our coalition, and you have a handout that demonstrates that. First of all, about the Human Services Coalition of Oregon, we're about 80 organizations and individuals statewide. We've been active in the state of Oregon since the middle 80s to advocate on behalf of low-income Oregonians, and part of that advocacy is recognized along the way, the tax structure and the need for making the tax system more fair. And so we have always been strong supporters of the earned income tax credit because of that. I'm also pleased that the Coalition for Livable Future is on that list. I'm vice president of that organization. But there's just a whole myriad of groups, everyone from AARP to the Community Action Partnership in Yamhill County and New Seasons Market. So we have really quite an interesting group of people and organizations working on this. I want to pay just a special tribute to Patty Whitney Wise, who's been a tireless advocate for this over the years. In 2007 session, there were really a handful of us working the earned income tax credit. I'm really proud and pleased that we have so many people around the state that are now very interested and recognize the value of the earned income tax credit. You notice that some of us are wearing a sticker today that says, working families need help, and we are asking for your help to make the earned income tax credit expansion possible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You know, I've been wondering who to ask this kind of philosophical question of, because our struggle as a legislature is the cost of this. You know, obviously, it would take, using old numbers, it'd be roughly $100 million a biennium to pay for this. And that $100 million might otherwise be used to pay for programs that affect, you know, other low-income people. So it's a struggle. It's going to be a struggle for us balancing that. So I wanted to give you a chance to comment on that.
Madam Chair, what I would say to that, I think that's an excellent question to raise, and it's one of the things the Human Services Coalition always grapples with, because we'll be talking in various committees about a variety of programs that are really very important to support. And as I mentioned earlier, the issue about the tax structure for us has always been about principles that the Revenue Restructuring Tax Task Force talked about. We had our principles in place way back in the late 1980s about adequacy, fairness, and stability. And so I think these things go hand in hand, supporting the programs that work with low-income people, but also looking at making changes to the tax structure that will make things fair. And I very much recognize it's a difficult task this session. When things looked a little better in 2007, we had even identified a way in which to pay for the earned income tax credit, and it was ultimately really used for paying for other tax credits. So as Mike Leachman pointed out, every session that we can recall, the legislature grapples with and thinks about a number of different tax expenditures and tax credits. We would certainly like the earned income tax credit to be in the mix this time around.
Thank you very much. Questions from the, before you take off, questions from the committee? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, all of you, for coming today. I guess my comments would be focusing on Senator Rosenbaum's attribute to Paul Krugman. Krugman.
Yeah. I think it's Krugman, isn't it?
Krugman. Yeah. Krugman?
They said Krugman and Krugman, but I think it's Krugman.
To those politicians that are working to provide solutions to our problems. And we spent a great deal of energy in looking comprehensively at our tax system. We tested many models. We even tested it with the public. And I guess I just continue to struggle in this process, in this building, with the little incremental fixes that we have to these problems that don't address the root cause or a master solution. And, philosophically, you know, supporting the investment earned income tax credit, that's easy to do. But there are comprehensive solutions that would provide for significant increases in the earned income tax credit that would provide stability, greater stability, adequacy, and addressing the regressive nature of our tax system. And I just regret that this process doesn't lead us to that comprehensive solution. Maybe crisis is sufficient that would actually motivate this body to take a leadership role in finding comprehensive solutions. That's my fondest hope. But thank you for a platform to...
Well, thank you. And I'll add on that, Senator Morris really put his money where his mouth is in any number of ways, because he actually came up with a comprehensive proposal that would have included an element for the expansion of the earned income tax credit. And I certainly share his frustration that we can't just have a comprehensive approach. As we found out in this committee the last couple of weeks, is that we've been getting briefings, especially poor Chris here got the brunt of it, just the enormous complications of the tax code. And you push here and something pops out there. Mm-hmm. And that's no excuse. And we hope to have some things through this committee that will definitely improve things. But I certainly share your frustration, Senator Morris. Senator Hess.
Thanks. I think on that note, too, is when I look at this, and I'm supportive of this, but one thing about trying to help people through the tax system who are in poverty is to try to reduce the number of people in poverty. And I think there's lots of ways to skin a cat, and one of the ways that we see that you can do that is to provide more access to higher education, particularly helping younger families never get into poverty, and there are the data on that is well known. And so while this may be $100 million or whatever we want to raise it to, $100 million put into access to affordable education might get us to the same place or maybe even better. And to me, those feel like sustainable ways to get out of the hunger canyons that we seem to be in. Not to say that we should ignore tax fairness, but I would like to lift people out of poverty, not just provide them with a better tax treatment. So,
if I might, Madam Chair, Senator Haas, I think that those are excellent points. I was certainly moved by Representative Comp's testimony today to hear her personal story and the folks that are experiencing poverty right now. We definitely need a comprehensive look about meeting immediate needs while looking at how to help families become more self-sufficient over time. And I know those are very difficult choices for all of you to make, to apportion the resources to all of that, but I definitely think a comprehensive look at how we get out of poverty is very important, and we would be happy to engage further in discussion on those issues.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. Is there anybody else who'd like to speak on this? Somebody, Anna, do we have anybody signed up over there? No more names to call? Okay. Senator Rosenbaum, do you have any parting comments?
No, I think I would just say, I think the comments from committee members are well taken, but the reality is that as much as we'd like to solve all the world's problems this session, I think we know that's not going to happen. And as much as I agree with Senator Hess that ideally everybody would have a college education and a great job, that's not the reality of the world that we're in. And it's not the reality of the world that people are facing anytime in the foreseeable future. In fact, the trend is quite the opposite, that the jobs are disappearing, we know that. And so I think, what we're saying is really it's early in a period of a serious discussion going on at a national level and here in Oregon about what steps are within our control that we can take to put people on track to at least not disappear on us, at least be in a position that they can even stay in school if they're lucky enough to be there, or stay at work if they're lucky enough to have a job. So I think, that's all really we're presenting to you today, is one piece of moving parts where we, I think, are going to have a serious discussion about priorities. Inevitably, we are both budget priorities and revenue priorities. And so I think the people here today and really thousands of people, you know, 200,000, are out there wanting something to come out of this building that can actually help them feed their families. And so, and not to be too mushy about it, but I think that really, those are the kinds of priorities that we're needing to grapple with. So,
thank you, Chair. Senator Telfer.
And I appreciate that those comments, Senator Rosenbaum, because you're so right. This is just a piece of addressing the problem. And this chart that was included in the material from the Oregon Center for Public Policy is really, I mean, if you look at this, it says a lot. First of all, with showing the income taxes, it is not as regressive as one might think, because they do go up. But what it does show is that those lower income brackets probably need to go away, meaning don't even tax somebody at the lower income. What we're dealing with, the EITC, as we call it in the state, is those are for working families. It's called earned income. That means you get a W-2 for it, or you're self-employed. The problem with the earned income credit is it has some limitations that kick some people, I think needy people, off of it. If they have $600 of interest and dividend income or something like that. The other caution is, with unemployment on the rise, a lot of people aren't going to be able to take advantage of this as they have in the past, because they won't have earned income. So this is a piece, but there may be some other areas, such as the rates. We've got property taxes, which is where the real regressive tax is, if you look at that. I'm not sure what the excise taxes are that are being included in here, because that's very, very regressive, since we don't have a sales tax in the state.
These are gasoline and tobacco,
those types of things.
Chair Burdick, Senator Telford, the excise taxes here would be primarily gas tax, but also cigarette tax.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
These are regressive.
Yeah, but so again, what Senator Rosenbaum said is very correct. This is just a very slim piece. But on the other hand, we have a red dot, green dot. This is philosophy I have, is the red dot, green dot approach policy is that for every green dot we have, we want a new program or we want to spend money, particularly in today's budgetary crisis, we have to take a red dot and put it on a budget line item somewhere that says, well, we're not going to do this. Meaning if we're going to do something and give somebody money, we also have to take a red dot and put it on the budget that says, well, it's prioritizing. Red dot, green dot seems to be something people can grasp easier than prioritizing. But in any case, I think it's a step in the right direction. I just want to make sure that we understand that we are talking about reallocating funds and that we may not get as much bang for our buck as we think because of the employment situation. This tax is based on employment. So just a little caution there.
Yeah, and there'll be at the national level, and it will probably come to our state, is that there's a proposal to not tax unemployment benefits. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I think that's something that we will be looking at very seriously in this committee as well, if we do indeed disconnect from the...
And Madam Chair, just one other comment, too, that I hadn't thought of before, is that when this discussion moved forward last session, there was a work group mm-hmm. on that was very active. It included... Representative Butler, who was our CPA at the time. And so I think, you know, there are lots of ways to carry this discussion on. There's a bill over on the House side, too. And so hopefully this is the beginning of a process.
One just last comment. I believe the picture on this is my church. So I was just
oh, really?
Wow. I think somebody's pandering to Senator Telfer here. Okay, well, thank you very much. And thank you, members of the audience, both for coming to this hearing and for your participation in the Hunger Day at the Capitol today. I may have said it wrong, but thank you for being here and thank you for being in the Capitol. We are adjourned.